We're here.
I wish I could give this feeling. I wish I could give this feeling.
This is the first episode of The Corner. My name is Kel Dansby.
Yo, and this is Andreas Hale. And yes, thank you for coming in. So I can give you a little bit of background of what The Corner is, right? So The Corner is an MMA, pro wrestling, hip-hop, boxing podcast. It kind of merges all those worlds. But we talk about all these things, and it sounds a little crazy, but it just might work. So me, I'm Andreas Hale. I'm a journalist. I cover sports for outlets like Sheridog, Ring Magazine. I've worked with Jay-Z's Life and Times. I was executive editor of BET.com. I don't like talking about myself, but that's kind of like the gist of it. And then, you know, we got my man, Kel.
Yo, my resume sounds nothing like Andre's resume. So I'm a journalist, though. I work for BSO, Black Sports Online. I mean, I've done journalism for years now. Usually cover MMA and boxing, but I really write about anything. This podcast, obviously, is for you, the fans. We're here to talk about what you want to hear us talk about. You get to read our articles. You get to see our opinions in that way. But now you really get the unfiltered, unedited version of what we think, our opinions, mine, often not popular. But, you know, you guys get to let us know what you guys want to hear.
Yeah. So, okay. So one thing I want to do is talk about why this show is called The Corner. Okay. The Corner is where everything happens. In hip-hop, the corner is where you battle rap. And that's where you find stars. In boxing, that's where you have your conversations. It's in the corner. In MMA, the same thing. Pro wrestling, not so much. The corner's there where guys get thrown into
it. Yo, that's where the exciting stuff happens.
Yeah, you jump off the top turnbuckle.
Yo, you got to come off the turnbuckle. We got to, Adrian Neville this.
So, and the other thing is, we're two brothers, in case you haven't noticed. Like, we're two black dudes that are ringside for boxing, MMA, and I love pro wrestling, right? You don't see too many of us at fights covering fights. We can talk about it. We can rap about it. But we don't really cover the sport. Not young black men don't really cover the sport.
Yo, that's how we met. Right. Because it was like, yo, there's someone else who's young and black.
Like, you funny come story. Over here. This show was almost called Minority Report for a very specific reason. We were at a fight and they sat all the black people together and there was three of us. And it was three of us sitting together and we were like, yo. And Dave Schaller from UFC, shout out to Dave. He laughed because he knew what we were laughing at. We were like, yo, we're the only three black journalists at a fight. Why are we sitting together? You remember that, Cal?
Yeah, yo, shout out to Heidi, who was also right next to us.
Oh, yeah, Heidi was there. She's black, too.
Yeah, so anyone with, like, a brown pigmentation in their skin, anyone with some type of melanin was all together in the back row. That was dope.
So from there, it was like, all right, look, we cover these sports, and we talk about them. Now, I've been covering music for a long time, and I know a lot of hip-hop artists who love talking boxing. Like, we don't even talk about rap. You know, we talk about boxing. We talk about pro wrestling. We talk about MMA. So we're trying to bring these worlds together. And not in that corny way where it'd be like, yo, what's your favorite rapper? It's not like that. Like, this show is a little bit different. The things that we're going to be doing is, like, we know what we're talking about. We're not Skip Bayless and Stephen A. Smith talking about Mayweather Pacquiao. Well, Stephen A. knows his boxing, and Skip just says whatever's on the adverse, right?
Yo, B, those are the only two boxers they know. They don't know a name of anybody else. Yo, man. If you didn't fight Floyd, you haven't fought Manny, they don't know you.
Steve knows his stuff, right? So I'll give Stephen A. a little, I'll give him some credit. But when I watch First Take, I cringe, right?
I can't even watch it, so big ups to you. Yo, I haven't seen it in like 2 years.
But that's why we have The Corner. So, over these next few weeks, and as long as you go and keep staying with us, we're going to have different guests. We're going to be bringing rappers through to talk about the fights. We're going to be bringing fighters through to talk about some hip-hop. And we're going to have a good time, right? So anyway, back to this Mayweather Pacquiao thing.
I just want to talk about the weekend.
Like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's
I am so excited about the weekend. Like, yo, imagine the parties. We're in Vegas, if you guys obviously don't know. If you follow us on Twitter, you know this. If this is your first time meeting us, we live in Vegas. We're here all the time. Mm-hmm. And this is going to be something like we've never seen before.
No, yo. So first of all, to go back, if you were in Vegas for All-Star Weekend, right? Like, people that were in Vegas for All-Star Weekend was like, yo, I'm never coming back. It was crazy. People were dying. There was fighting. Too many black people. It's going to be worse, right? Like, let's just be real. You All-Star Weekend happens every year. There's only one Floyd Mayweather Manny Pacquiao fight. Everybody's waiting to see it. Hotel rooms are retarded. I know that's not politically correct, but they're retarded. Like, the prices are ridiculous.
Yo, the MGM. So, someone lost their booking because their card didn't go through. I wrote about this a week ago. They had one room available, 3 G's, the night of the fight.
Now I'm sleeping on somebody's lawn, yo. Like, listen, first and foremost, 93% of the people coming out here, 98% are not going to the fight.
Nah, you can't get tickets to that.
Like, you're coming to be part of a spectacle and to get paid too much for everything. And then you're going to watch the fight. Like, I would watch the fight if I lived in, like, bubble fuck Idaho on pay-per-view for whatever the ridiculous price is going to be.
Yeah.
So why are you here? Why are you coming?
Oh, it's going to be thought-tastic.
Thought-tastic.
Thought-tastic. That's why people are coming out here. Because it's going to be Twitter in real life. So everybody who wants to shoot their shot, everybody who's anybody on Instagram, all those girls, all the fake body parts, all everything is going to be here for real.
You know what's fascinating about that, though? Like, Twitter in real life is a really scary thought because, like, most people aren't themselves. Like, because you don't really see the shady side of you on Twitter. You see, like, the beef or whatever. So I can see that. You know, people going to come up here and say, like, yo, DMs are going to be crazy.
Listen. No, I'm going to be out there. Listen, I'm by no means am I old and washed yet. I know it's dope to be washed on Twitter. I ain't there yet.
Man.
I need to enjoy this.
I'm older than you, bro. So I've done this before, and I don't know physically I could get myself ready for what's about to happen, right? And then on top of that, you know, I'm married. So my thing is, yeah, I could party. I'm going home. You know what I'm saying? Like, when the night's done, I'm going home. And most people that are going to come out, there's going to be some creeps. There's going to be some creep life going on. Oh. And you're going to get caught. You know what I'm saying? Like, chill with that. But what I do know is that you have to experience this. Like, if you're coming to Vegas and you're not going to the fight and you don't just save all your money and just blow it, it's irresponsible as hell. But, I mean, that's what you kind of got to do, right?
Yo,
you can't really do anything.
You're going to be talking about this for the next 40 years of your life. Like, just... No one's going to say, like, oh, were you in the arena when Floyd and Manny fought?
Like, you are.
Well, yeah, we're going to be in the arena.
We were there. But for everybody else that ain't selling out $7,500 a ticket for ringside, $1,500 for the nosebleeds, and that's before the brokers get their hands on them, you're coming out here to party. Because you know everybody who's anybody in this industry
everyone
is going to be here for this fight. Like, people who don't care about boxing are going to watch this fight.
Yo, I'm not going to sleep for 3 days. Like, I'm going to be
on it.
I don't know what
you're talking
about. I'm not sleeping for 3 days. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I'm not getting any sleep.
Like, so here's the other issue, right? Because we cover this sport. It's kind of hard to party when you got to cover fights.
Yeah, it's the worst.
Because, like, I'm going to be on deadline for Ring Magazine, right? Yeah. And it's like, as soon as I file my story and then I got to write a thought piece on what happened, it's going to be like 3 a.m. And I'm not really going to want to party and do anything like that, but I just might. You know what I'm saying? Like,
you got to do it.
For anybody who's never been to Vegas, like, all right, so I grew up here for the most part, and as a kid, I used to stand outside for Tyson fights, right? I was like 16 years old, Tyson fights, couldn't go anywhere. Club 662 was open, Suge Knight's club, and I used to stand outside, and that's all we did. We stood outside and was like, yo, it's girls in fishnets, and I see nipples, and I was there when Tupac stomped dude out. Like, I was there in the MGM that night and watched him, George Jefferson, walk out of the casino. That's all I don't like the Bruce Seldon fight. I didn't watch the fight. As soon as the fight came on, I got in my car and was like, yo, let's roll, and we're going to the strip to hang up for the fights. Floyd Mayweather fights are like a microcosm what Tyson fights used to be.
Yeah.
But when you're at a Mayweather fight, it's like, I mean, it's like freak day. It's like All-Star Weekend whenever he fights.
Yo, every time, yo, it's a spectacle. Like, you just gotta be around it. You can feel it. Like, you hop off the plane, you just feel that energy. You just know, like, yo, it's go time. Whatever it takes, please have connections. Do not pay full price anywhere. That's my advice to you. If you come out here paying full price, you drop in at least 10 G's.
You was a sucker and you lost. But,
yo, if you got it, spend it.
If you got to spend it this weekend, but, like, dude, like, you're going to have to spend. Like, don't come out here and then be cheap. Because you're going to regret coming out here. Because you had to have a little bit of cheddar to come out here in the first
place. Yeah,
to get on that flight. To get a room. And then decide, yeah, I'm going to go out to a fight I can't really go to. You got to really break some a little bit of bread, right? Like, I commend y'all that are going to come out to this fight. And I hope I run into some of y'all. Because I want to know what the hell y'all doing. I really do. I know where I'm going to be at. And it's going to be wherever it's cracking. Like, that's where I'm
going. Yo, that's it. Like, I'm doing all the pre-fight stuff, and then I'm a man of the people. I'm coming hang out with y'all. Like, wherever y'all at, let me know what parties, I'm going everywhere. whatever pool I can get into. That's the best thing living in Vegas. You got connections. Yeah. Just hit people up like, yo, let me in. Real quick, skip the line, go in, chill for 45 minutes. Yo, this person at Dre's. All right.
You know, unless up and out. Somebody's going to die.
Yo, yeah, it's not going to be good.
It ain't going to be in the ring. It's going to be out in the street. Like, I don't know if Vegas can contain the type of madness that's about to come. Like, we do New Year's out here every year, right? And that's like midnight, and then it's over.
Yeah.
This is a weekend of ridiculous, urban craziness. Somebody's going to get hurt.
I'm parking far and walking.
Yo, we got credentials. Like, so we going to be parking in the casino or whatever, but
I don't think I get out of the casino. That's my problem.
That's the problem. I don't think we're going to get out of the casino.
Like, but I don't even... I got to just...
I mean...
I'm wearing my Roshis. I'm just walking. Like, I got to be super comfortable that whole weekend. No club... I hope a club doesn't say anything stupid. Like, yo, you need dress shoes. Yeah, ain't no dumb dress shoes.
We
ain't dress coding it up. Comfortable.
Like, this thing is really exciting. It's like a countdown clock. We're going to have to count... They have a countdown clock every week. How many days it is to the Mayweather fight? Now, for my West Coast people, if you're in L.A., if you're driving out, I don't know what it's going to be like when you leave on Sunday, if that's what your choice is.
Stay an extra day.
Yeah, just stay an extra
day. Just chill. It's Vegas.
Like, I thought about renting out my house, right? I thought I was like, yo, I'm going to rent out my... And I live far.
Yeah, Airbnb. It's all...
Yo, pay my rent. I'm going to make my rent forever.
Yo, that's it.
You pay my rent forever. That's what you can do. Pay my rent forever. But then I had to think, where am I sleeping? If I rent out my crib, where am I sleeping at?
Yo, yeah, that's real. I mean, you just got to shack up with somebody. Got to just family something.
Nah, man.
Listen, if I rent out my spot, I got to come sleep on your couch. Like, this is just how, this is what got to happen.
I know you, I can't have these clowns coming up in my crib. Because, you know, they're going to want to party, too. They want to, I mean.
Oh, yeah, that's rough.
Yeah, no. We're not doing that. But anyway, let's get back to this fight. And like I said, we're not going to spend too much time on Mayweather Pacquiao. But, Kel, I got to ask you. How much of a chance does Pacquiao have?
Oh, man, he has a small puncher's chance, and I don't think he has a punch anymore. So I'm taking Floyd. He's not gonna shut him out. Keith Thurman, you know, one of his best quotes recently is, "Yo, you get Floyd in the first three rounds.
Yep.
Like either you knock him out in the first three, or you're taking an L, and that's it. So if Manny just comes out and he just goes heavy volume, I mean, we saw it, and even though I think Floyd set this up." Mostly, but we saw it in the Maidana fight.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Maidana fight. Maidana came out. He threw a million punches the first three rounds. Floyd stood there, didn't move too much. Mm-hmm. Floyd took, like, the last 8 out of 9.
Look, let's just be honest. When people were saying Floyd didn't do that on purpose, oh, he had a tough fight. No, he didn't.
No, he needed that rematch. He wanted that money.
Well, not only did he need the rematch, but people were complaining how boring his last few fights was. And when you feel like somebody can lose, you're more inclined to watch the rest of the fight and talk about it. So with Floyd, it was like, I'm going to stand in the pocket, let Mayweather, you know, let Maidana get his shit off,
yeah.
And then I'm going to take away all his weapons, and I'm going to win the fight. And that's what he did.
That easy. And the second fight, he ain't even play with him.
Nah, he got him right out of there. Yo, what people forget about Floyd Mayweather, he's probably got the best footwork in boxing.
Yeah.
And people talk about the shoulder roll, but it's not as great as his footwork. And if you back him up against the ropes, he knows how to spin and get away from you. He telegraphs punches when they're coming, and he moves. His biggest flaw is that he doesn't have enough output.
Yeah, and you can give someone else rounds. The untrained eye can give someone else rounds due to output when they're missing.
So,
and that was Maidana's joint. Like he was just swinging. Yeah, he wasn't hitting anything.
That's the only way you can win. And you're not going to beat Floyd Mayweather at a boxing match. All right, let's just be very clear. You can't beat a master, grandmaster at chess. You can't beat Bobby Fischer at chess. You need to take the goddamn chess. The chest table, smash it over his head and walk away.
That's it. Yo, you're knocking him out or you're not winning.
That's it. Like you, these fools that box with him and train to box, and then you go, oh, I'm going to use the Castillo thing or I'm going to use what Maidana did. No, you have to be dirty to a certain extent.
Yeah.
You got to punch him in the
gotta
nuts.
You got to be Cotto. Like
you got to be Victor Ortiz,
like
but
you
not
gotta
apologize.
Cut him a little bit.
You can't apologize like Victor Ortiz.
Nah, yeah,
did.
That set him up for
I'm going to headbutt you, Floyd, but I ain't apologizing. So I'm going to do it again. Yo. Take some points away from me. I'm going to piss you off. But if Pacquiao goes in there and thinks he can outbox Floyd Mayweather, he's going to lose.
And I think he will. I mean, you know, I saw Pacquiao against Bradley the first time. Like, yo, he left it close. You don't even put it in the judge's hand.
Nah, you don't do
that. I thought he won, but he left it close. So, I mean, he has to really come out and go for the knockout. It's a 4-round fight.
Yeah.
Treat it like he's Butterbean.
True. All right, so we got other segments. We got a guest coming up, my man Ryan McKinnell from Yahoo Sports. We're going to take a brief little break. Now, look. You can follow me at Andreas Hale. Kel, give him your Twitter.
At Kel Dansby. Yo, we're so basic with our Twitters.
Yeah, we're simple. First names, that's it. That's what I fight for.
Yeah, so Ryan will be coming through next. Chill out for 1 second. We'll be right back talking UFC, WWE, everything else, hip-hop.
Kendrick Lamar album.
Oh, God. Stay tuned. All right, we're back. We got a guest in the house right now.
Yes. Yes, the one and only, introing myself because I have the biggest ego in Las Vegas, Ryan McKittle, Yahoo Sports. Man, I want to thank you guys for bringing me on. You know, we have these conversations, this kind of corner conversation. I mean, Andres and Kel, we've only met probably within the last year, but, I mean, we start conversations, and you'll catch us after events, after press conferences. We'll be in the parking lot an hour later still having conversations, not getting work done.
Never getting work done.
Never getting work done.
Always talking about stuff that other people look at us and say, you should have a podcast.
You should
have a podcast.
Yeah.
So now we got a podcast,
there
right?
There you go.
Right?
And Ryan came in today, and, you know, you expect him to talk UFC, talk boxing. First thing he brings up, hip-hop, Kendrick. Yep. First thing out of his mouth.
How can you not talk about it? It took over the music world this week. I mean, we've been waiting for the debut for 2 years, and it dropped. And Andreas, you said some really poignant stuff. And I know we're talking about MMA, boxing, pro wrestling. I'm at Yahoo. It is my expertise, but I'm also a fat, lonely white kid from the Midwest whose only link to real knowledge and real expression was hip hop, KRS-One, Public Enemy. And so this album, it feels like a throwback to that. Mm-hmm. It feels like a statement, and it feels like it really came at a time where, I mean, it's never more needed.
You're right. I mean, we have an album that's aesthetically what you would never have heard on the radio like 5 or 6 years ago. You know what I'm saying? Like, you wouldn't hear a Kendrick album with an aesthetic of, like, Parliament, you know, that funk. And something that, you know, everybody keeps saying is it's aggressively black. It's about hip-hop culture. It's very urban. Like, it's not black because of convenience. It's black because it wants to be black. It's a powerful statement.
I think that's overrated, though. Like, I think that's pushed it over the top, and people are going, like, with the message of it, which is great. Mm-hmm. But judging the music, people are like, yo, this is a classic. No, it's not classic music. It's a classic message. It's classic impact. Now, if you want to argue a lot of classics in history are like that, then sure. But this is, you listen to music, it leaves a little to be desired as far
right,
as
so
the classic.
Kel's bugging, right? So
right. Yeah, we're just gonna stop Kel from talking now, and we're gonna restart the show from the beginning and not talk about Kel. No, I can get what Kel, I think, is hinting at or kind of talking about in regards to the fact that it is such a departure from maybe what people have become accustomed to when talking about a guy like Kendrick, but most fans of Kendrick know that this is a guy who doesn't do what he did before. He's constantly about evolution. And this is kind of what we were talking about before the show got started, is what I'm really take away from Kendrick is that it's kind of what you talked about, Andreas, is he has this ability to reach so many people. But my thing is he's not scared to do it. So many people don't realize their place in an industry, or they don't give themselves credit. I don't know exactly what it is, but he gets it, and he's not afraid.
You know, the thing that's fascinating is, like, I wrote a piece on Two Dope Boys. You can actually go check that now.
Shameless plug
from 2011 where I said Kendrick Lamar is the greatest MC of the digital era. And the reason why I said that is because there's no artist that's really like him. And what that means is, you know, when I talked about being unapologetically black, when you had Tupac and when you had Ice Cube and you had people that weren't scared to talk about these subjects, or when a mic gets put in front of them and somebody's asking them questions, a lot of artists back down. I mean, I hate to throw shade at Kanye, but where's Kanye at when Trayvon Martin was going?
Exactly.
You know, where are these artists?
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
So when Kendrick comes out and he makes these songs, he's talking about Garvey and Black of the Berry. Like, first of all, you got a song named Black of the Berry, and you're talking about...
It's a statement.
Yeah, and you're talking about even... You know, it's black progression, but then it's also being a hypocrite in your own society. So the message is always there with Kendrick, and lyrically, he's dope. But let's talk about, because you mentioned my tweet I put out there about classics.
Yeah.
Go ahead and mention
it. Well, it perked my ears up, because all three of us here essentially are critics. Mm-hmm. It's what we do. It's kind of, we're social surveyors of the landscape around us, I guess, right?
Yeah.
So when you tweeted out, yo, you don't get to call the Pimp a Butterfly a classic. Not today, not tomorrow, not next week. It's a disservice to the art. Well, The thing that immediately comes to me is you famously once did a review for the Source magazine where you gave Kanye West, A Dark Twisted Fantasy, a five mic, mm-hmm. rating. And that is dubbing it a classic, essentially,
instant
in the same
classic.
Time. Right. So, exactly. Instant classic, Kel. So, what is the criteria for a classic? Because, first of all, when I saw the album cover to Pimp a Butterfly, classic. Mm-hmm. You put a dead judge at the feet of a bunch of scary black men at the foot of the White House holding up money and being happy. I mean, that's a statement right there. King Kunta, Black or the Bear. I mean, this is all very much a statement to black America, but it also resonates with all America because I just saw Talib Kweli last week and he said, yo, all lives can't matter until black lives matter. Mm. And that is some really poignant stuff. And I think some people could hear that and be taken aback. No, he's right. Because you have to start, and I don't mean this in any other way, but you have to start at the bottom. You have to start at what the real issues are. And right now, that is a major issue, and Kendrick's tackling it. So my question, to bring it all back, though, is you can call Kanye a classic within a month. I think you were just trying to do right by Kendrick, right?
Well, here's the thing. Social media is like microwave, right? Things come along so quickly. The album hadn't been out like 4 hours yet. People are like, yo, it's a classic. Like, listen, classics are timeless material, right? And you got to sit there and spend time with that album and find every deep-seated nugget that you can find. To call an album a classic is a disservice to the time that Kendrick put into the album. How can you call it a classic when it takes longer than to Kendrick to write that verse? You know what I'm saying? So when we did the Kanye West, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, it wasn't just my decision that it was five mics, right? You know, we had to come to a decision as a group at the Source that this is a five mic
album. Is that how that works? Does everyone kind of like sit around in a conference and be like, yo, what? And what kind of gets talked about? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, things, you talk about a lot of things when it comes to a five mic album because you're making a statement with that. You know what I'm saying? Like when you
I don't mean to cut you off, but I can just think back to 97, 98 mm-hmm. when Gangstar's Moment of Truth came out and they gave that a 4.5 star or a 4 star
and
or a 4
wild
mic.
Out.
Yeah, people lost their minds.
Is it a classic?
Absolutely. Okay. I mean, do you not agree?
No.
Oh, okay,
I agree.
Just asking.
I agree.
Yeah, yeah.
See, there are albums that stand the test of time and get better with age because I believe Black Star's album got like a 3.5 or 4 in the Source. Whoever the editor at the time was, I want to say it was Kim, I'm not sure, but that's crazy. That album's amazing. Most That's Black on Both Sides, the Reflection of Turnline. These are great albums.
Does editor get final veto on that kind
yes.
of?
Yes.
Okay.
So it's like, you know, I could throw in my 2 cents. Like, I'll be honest, when I wrote that review, I gave it a 4.5 because I was like, I don't get to make the decision because I'm not staff. But then, Bonsu was editor at the time, contacted me, he was like, yo, I think we're going to give this a 5. Do you agree? Because we're not just going to override what you're doing. I said, yeah. And on top of that, I feel like Kanye gets the Denzel Washington Award. He should have got a 5-mic review for College Dropout years ago. And, you know, it sucks that, you know, this is how it's got to be viewed. But it's a great album. It's a phenomenal album.
How much of that was impact, though? Like, going into the 5-mic, away from just the content on the album, mm-hmm. he dropped something every week. The build-up was crazy. The buzz was crazy. The hype behind
it was
great.
And they were bangers. This one, 808.
No
offense to that album, but I mean, these were bangers.
And
Monster
it was a great song every week. Then the project dropped, and you're like, all right, yo, this is it. It's incredible. 5 mics.
See, and that's the other thing. It took me like a week and a half I sat with that album. You know what I'm saying? I didn't do it in like 3 days. Like, I listened to the song in my car. I listened to the album in my house playing video games. I listened to the album watching fights on mute. I listened to the album everywhere I went. And that's how I kind of review albums. Especially when the ratings get higher than 4 in my head, I start going, okay, I need to listen to this more in different places.
Well, you're attaching your name to it.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I can't attach my name to no nonsense. That's not how we roll. But social media can't deem an album a classic overnight. You got to take some time, and the people have to speak in long term. Because, like, if you go back to when Nas dropped Illmatic, the review came out before anybody heard it.
Well, it was a mixtape, essentially, wasn't it?
Well, no, it was album.
6 tracks.
Yeah.
Two dropped in 92 because it was Live at the Barbecue drop.
There you go.
And then people wanted more joints, so he dropped Halftime.
On the Zebrahead soundtrack.
Yeah, It Ain't Hard to Tell mm-hmm. came out in 92. The album didn't come out until summer 93.
Right.
So you heard about three, including Live at Barbecue, you heard about 3 or 4 Nas tracks.
Live at Barbecue wasn't on album.
It wasn't on album.
No.
But you had 3 or 4 Nas tracks a year earlier.
Right.
Dropped Live at the Barbecue because that was just like a feature.
Well, that was
and
it. Yeah,
it was a compilation.
Spot that,
yeah.
You know,
so.
Oh, okay. So you had
it took off.
You had 3 days with Kendrick now. Can mm-hmm. you call it a classic?
I'm leaning towards that it's a classic. Yeah. I'm very much so leaning. Look at Kel.
Well, that's kind of that was
Kel just, like Kel just slams his head down, right? And first of all, the thing that Kel says that we're gonna go ahead and full disclosure, you said Lupe's album is better. I think Lupe has a phenomenal album.
Great album.
Musically though, Kendrick's album is groundbreaking.
I think the impact of it is groundbreaking. It could have classic impact. No one is doing that right now. No one has the power to do what Kendrick just did. He made something commercially unacceptable in all means. That cover should not be a number one Billboard cover.
And yes, it should, but I get what you're saying.
and he's going to make it that, and that shows his impact. So the impact can be classic. You know, there was classic stuff before. I remember when Nas was on the cross in that video, and people were just like, yo, it's bananas. Some images and some movements are long-lasting.
Yeah, but we knew the Nas album was butt.
Okay. Yeah, right.
And here's another thing in regards to Kendrick, is no one has really written an album with the type of care and the type of thought behind it and the type of narrative of these first two albums that he's put out. It's similar to Lupe, when you can listen to one song 1,000 times and find a million different things he's doing. Kendrick is leaving it in the truest form of art, open to interpretation. Well, what's the pimp? What's the butterfly? Each song and each, you know, his what the end of each song when he's leading into the poem. I mean, that type of stuff, and then taking the influences of Miles Davis and James Brown and melding it all together, and then having a message behind it. If he died tomorrow, he'd be the greatest MC of all time.
Ah, okay. That's the case of a lot of people.
Really, quick. I mean, no one has the first two albums to compare to this. It's true.
Here's the problem. There are artists like Ice Cube. If Ice Cube would have died,
I agree.
Around Lethal Injection,
yeah,
greatest rapper of all time. His voice,
his delivery, his impact, absolutely.
LL Cool J's first few projects, amazing. I don't know if it makes him greatest rapper of all time, but. Amazing.
At the time?
Death makes you dope in hip-hop. That's just the way it is.
No, it does.
Because if Tupac lived longer and made some trash, because he would have got jiggy with it, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Something would have happened. And it would have diminished his value.
Will Smith featuring Tupac.
Yeah, same with Biggie.
Yeah.
Biggie could have been M, where you just get three and then...
And he's out.
Yeah.
And he starts doing a East Indian accent and rapping about curry and whatnot.
What up?
Harlan, yeah. I mean, M, you done lost your mind there for a few years. You know it.
Yeah, so, I mean... That does make you hot. And Kendrick's on a good roll. And he got a good lane. And he's unique. And that's important to him. But classic, it's like he's getting credit for something the generation is doing. Sure, Kanye doesn't do it. Sure, you know, some other people before had to conform. No one's doing that now. J. Cole drops whenever he wants to drop. He talks about Sally Mae in every single verse. Action Bronson drops a wrestling line in every single verse. They can do what they want. Drake is overly emotional and singing. The same thing Ja Rule got his career ended for and does it now, and no one can say anything.
Well, it's different.
Everyone is unique and doing whatever they want.
But it's different, right? Because you still have to follow. You still have to have a single. If you're an artist, you have to have a single.
Cole didn't have anything.
Kendrick doesn't have
a single.
But no one really listens to Cole, and no one really listens to Lupe.
He sold out MSG.
I know, but millions of people listen to Kendrick. When Kendrick drops the control verse, I mean, he just has the ability to stop the game and have all eyes turn on him, whether it be a verse, an album release, and then all that attention, what he's taking and doing with it, which is basically a middle finger to a lot of things. I mean, he's a ballsy 27-year-old.
Yeah, I mean, it's just... Like, all right, you look at what Drake's doing, right? Drake doesn't take any risks. That's not risk. You know what I'm saying? Like, Drake morphs into whatever artist he's with at the time. If Drake took a risk, Drake would have had a Dilla song. Drake would have worked with his favorite artist, Fonte. He doesn't take those risks. Kendrick working with Thundercat, Flying Lotus on this album, Anna Wise for Sunny Moon. There's people going, who the hell is Anna Wise? I know who Anna Wise is, but people don't know who that is. Those are risks. Artists don't really take risks. They do things that they think will work.
Yep.
Kendrick didn't do anything that sounds remotely close to what anybody else is doing.
Nothing.
And I mean, we're talking about...
He's making it his own, man. He's taking hip-hop and making... East, West, Midwest, it doesn't matter.
He's bearing, but it's still so West Coast.
Did Kendrick save hip-hop?
No.
No?
Not at all.
Nah, I wouldn't say not at all.
Not at all.
Hell, you're like
Yo,
really,
I don't mind like Kendrick. Really... I really don't. But saving hip-hop is one
Wait,
hell
you,
of a statement.
You don't like Kendrick?
No, I don't mind him.
I'm good.
Like, I'm not a Kendrick hater.
Gotcha.
Like, I don't dislike his music.
Here's my...
I don't mind him.
Yo, like, Section 80 is dope.
Yo,
it's his best project. I'm in the minority. But I just like that version of Kendrick. Like you said, he doesn't put out the same thing twice. I like that version of him.
Okay.
And this new one's not bad. Like, his lyrics, I mean, there's nothing lyrically long-lasting to me. I like his message, but punchlines, metaphors, double entendres, there's one line. You mentioned the line earlier. Besides that, can someone name another line?
Wow. Yet? Yeah, lots. Yeah, no.
Which one did you bring up in conversation?
Oh, I don't know. I've only had a couple days with the album. Yeah, the Killer Mike album. Everything. That was I'd be like, yo,
I put on Twitter, name one line. You ain't hear that Killer Mike line? Yes, everyone heard the Killer Mike line.
Because it was poignant. Because he took in the landscape around him.
I mean, it's been 3 days.
And basically,
It's been 3 days. I mean, when Illmatic dropped, I don't think everybody was quoting verses from Life's a Bitch. Right. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I get what you're trying to say, but I respectfully disagree with you.
I understand most people do.
And all
and this is how all our conversations
go
between us. I look kind of crazy in a lot of conversations.
Well, yeah, even we can segue into pro wrestling if you like. But one of the first conversations we had where my jaw dropped. And I just kind of like dead looked you in the eyes and like continued on with another conversation is when you said when you didn't think Sami Zayn was a main roster guy
top five, right?
You shouldn't be making lists. Anytime you make a list on the internet, you're asking for like nuclear meltdown on your Twitter feed. But then you say the most beloved ginger, you know, just six spot wrestling worker of the last 10 years, probably. I don't know. Isn't a main roster top five call up. Oh my goodness, Kel.
But he's lucky they're bringing relevancy to the Intercontinental Championship. That's what the only thing he's holding.
My God. All right, listen. To kind of save Kel here, he didn't watch enough El Generico.
No, and I like El Generico, the character, better than Sami Zayn. Let me say that.
Have you listened to enough Kendrick?
I'm listening to a good amount of Kendrick. So Kendrick and Sami Zayn?
I'm just kidding. No, it was more about forming it.
I mean, it's same premise. Like, Sami Zayn is not going to be the face of WWE.
No, I can't really disagree with that.
I don't disagree with you. Here's the thing. Like,
are we all just hoping on hope that he puts on a luchador mask like in 2 years?
Every day.
Debuts at WrestleMania.
I was hoping that Owens would break his back. He'd retire. He'd come on the next day, next NXT. Say, I'm retiring. I'm never going to wrestle again. They move him up to the main roster as a luchador with a mask and have that guy never take off the mask. Everyone would know it was Zayn.
Right.
And we'd get the same chance and everything, but it'd be like the quietest kept secret. That's how you move him up.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, thanks for making us sad.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, because it's never happened.
Yes, exactly.
But we know that Sami Zayn right now, like, you look at him, he's the Daniel Bryan of NXT. He had the same title chase, and he finally made it. Now he got his back broke by Kevin Owens. You're right. When he does get called up, he'll be in that Ziggler territory for a long time. Because, and we talked about this before, you only have certain types of characters that you can put in certain molds in the WWE. You can't have three Daniel Bryans. You only have one. All right. You can only have one powerhouse. You only have Roman Reigns, which we'll talk about this WrestleMania nonsense in a minute. So when Zayn gets called up, it's like, all right, well, I don't want him to get called up. Like, I want to, like, the play in the minor leagues, it's like watching, like, Eric Barkley at St. John's before the NBA. I was like, I don't want you to get drafted because they're going to ruin you. And how many people know who Eric Barkley is from St. John's today? No, stay in NXT. Do what you've been doing for the rest of your life, because that's me as a selfish fan. I'm selfish.
Well, plus, I mean, don't you get the feeling that he could almost take that and run with it to the point where NXT, I don't want to say could rival the WWE in the main roster, but boy, could make a lot of money and do really successful tours and have their own niche.
Yeah.
And I know we know they're going to start touring. It's just a matter of...
I think if Vince doesn't give Triple H more control of the main roster, I think Triple H takes it that way. Well, and just says, this is mine. We're touring. We're just going to see how big we can build this.
Well, Vince has to see it, too. I mean, he has to, when he's wrong so many times, and word is that he is losing confidence and that he is kind of wondering about his place, which is good. I think that is a sign that at least he's paying attention to, okay, not all the decisions I'm making are surefire, you know, hits anymore. Not that they ever were before. Good God. I mean, the mid-90s.
We don't talk about the Godwins.
And I mean, there's so many bad ideas in pro wrestling, and I get it. You have to throw a bunch at the wall and see what sticks. But NXT is something really, really special right now.
But you know what else? It's like has its own niche, right?
It does.
It doesn't have to pander to kids. It doesn't have to pander to women. It doesn't have to pander to sponsors. That's why it works.
And you know, and the kids thing I think is a little overdone as well, because I think kids are simple. I think back to when I was a kid in the early 90s, late 80s, and Macho Man was an evil guy, right? Yeah. Macho Man was never a nice guy. The varying degrees on Macho Man was whether he was like actively beating Miss Elizabeth or not. That was like his heel face. Like, aside from that, you knew he was a heel if he was threatening to slap Miss Elizabeth. If he wasn't threatening to slap her, then he was a face. That was basically Macho Man. But
that was it.
But I would look around in the crowd, or I'd look around, you know, at the people ringside, and people would cheer him. And I would always wonder, why are people cheering this bad guy? My point is kids don't know what's cool or not. Kids just like what everyone else likes. So if you tell kids CM Punk's cool, kids are going to like CM Punk. If you tell people Kevin Owens is cool, kids are going to think Kevin Owens is cool. So this, the kind of, that each wrestler has to be, the, you know what I mean, a John Cena, or it has to cater just to kids and as a viewing audience, I think Vince is missing the mark on that, as well as a few other things, but that's one of them.
The only problem I see with this is, when's the last time WrestleMania ended on a bad note?
I can't remember. I mean, they saw Daniel Bryan last year. Man.
All those Cena-Rock things. Those Cena-Rock things were terrible.
They were both faces, though. What I'm talking about, when is a heel
gone over? Oh, you mean a bad note. You mean a bad note. Gotcha.
When is a heel gone over at Mania in the main event? Since Triple H in the Fatal 4-Way at WrestleMania 2000, right? Was there another one after that?
I quit watching around then.
I can't remember another one besides that.
It always ends with like, yay, hooray, yes, yes. Like, that's how we end.
Fireworks.
Right? That's why Rollins needs to cash in. I think we need to throw everybody for a loop.
They were chanting for Lana on Monday Night Raw. It was Russia versus USA, and the fans were chanting for Lana. They were chanting for Russia. I'm pretty sure I could go and start a Putin chant, and no one would care. the days of heels and faces are so gone. That's one of Vince's being out of touch. I mean, in theory, yes, we haven't had a heel win, fine, but that it's just people do care about matches. I don't care what Vince thinks. People care about matches, and people care about the people they like. And it doesn't necessarily, people like Lana because she's good on the mic. I truly believe that. Is she hot? Absolutely. Is she one of the best, well-spoken, authentic people that they have on that roster? I truly believe that. Yeah, when she speaks, it's like, okay, she believes what she's saying. And I think that's why people like her.
And I think Rollins can get over, like, in your scenario, I think it works.
Yes.
Because, I mean, no, if Rollins, I think he takes an RKO, if it works out that way. He takes an RKO, he loses to Orton. Orton looks like, oh, you know, I'm anti-authority, whatever, you know, I've changed my thing. Rollins catches in later, comes out, Brock throws him around a little bit, Orton comes in, say Rollins does something dirty, hits Brock with a chair, he's about to win easy, Orton comes in, think Orton's going to save the day, RKO Rollins, Brock gets up, he RKOs Brock, the whole authority comes out, everyone stomps Brock out, Rollins lays on him, gets the title.
That later, was Brock. Really elaborate.
Yo.
How long did you think about that?
2 seconds. 2 seconds. And they got months to think of this shit. I did in 2 seconds.
Well, that's the problem, is they have months to think about this shit. That's my real issue. You hear they got 25 writers. They got all these different ideas flowing around. There's no cohesion. They're changing on the fly. You know, we're writers. You need to have some focus. You need to have a direction. You need to have a voice. And they're without it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, listen, they're not trying to lose that paycheck.
Right.
Vince will come down quick.
Yeah.
Don't send no craziness up to Vince.
And you know what? Go back. I'm glad you brought it up. Like, actually, the Rusev Cena fight is something I'm really looking forward to. And the reason being is I need Cena to put Rusev over clean, because you do not have a monster heel in the company right now.
Is he the monster heel though?
Rusev?
Yeah.
If it ain't him, then it's who?
Heels even exist today?
That's what I'm saying. Rusev has legit.
You know what's going to take to have a legit heel? Like, for real? You're going to need to bring back the Big Boss Man, except he won't be the Big Boss Man. He'll be from some Midwest, podunk town, police abuse of power. You need to take real social issues that people are hot about.
You're trying to get that man killed.
That's absolutely
what it takes,
though. That's what, hey, people tried to kill the Horseman back in the day. And since we don't have any sort of semblance of blurred, everything's the same. There are no heels and faces. So if you want a real heel, get a cop who was, you know, unceremoniously dismissed from his police department for abuse.
From St. Louis, Missouri.
Right. Exactly. And,
from,
you know,
Ferguson.
Yeah, yeah. If you really want to twist the knife. No, I mean, they do need to, and I'm not talking solely on stuff like that or necessarily police brutality, but hard-hitting social issues. They did it with Zeb Coulter. And it worked for a little bit, but it got almost cartoony to where the point to where people bought into it and started, you know, playing off of it.
Therein lies the problem, right? Like, the WWE, you know, they still are publicly traded and they still got an audience. And if you go that route, and we're an ultra sensitive society, like, you call something, they're like, oh, you can't do that. Like, oh. And they was like, oh, he's a bad cop. And immediately everybody would call it out. It would get squashed. The push would get, he would end up being a jobber in like 3 weeks.
Oh, yeah, it's no worse than showing your dick all over the internet.
That's true.
I mean, it's like sensitivity is, a bunch of kids watch WWE and their favorite star, showing his dick everywhere. It was funny. I was with, we all know Lazy the Savage. Michael Mardona is in the MMA world, kind of part of the Ronda Rousey entourage. Went to a FSW show out here in Vegas, Future Stars of Wrestling, great indie show. And we went with his stepson, if you will, and he's like 9 years old, 10 years old. And I got a question that at every point an adult pro wrestling fan must answer to a child or to some inquisitive, it may be an adult, why are they wearing underwear? And I said, I said, son, you ask a question that everyone wonders at some point, and I try to say it's history, it's tradition, it's kind of just what it is, and then he just goes out of nowhere, I like Roman and Seth because they wear pants. And that was some profound shit, man.
That's legit.
Yep. Little 9-year-old liking it because he's not showing his bulge off, you know?
I don't have an answer for that.
No, dude. I know.
Yeah, I wouldn't know how to answer that. I'd be like,
I never thought about it.
No. Yeah.
Why does Cena wear jean shorts? I don't know. You know, some stuff just ain't right, my man. That's what I'd tell him.
But maybe the fact that we just watch it and don't even think about it, that's the brainwashing that is pro wrestling. I mean, we should think about it.
But you know what? Like, if a wrestler comes out in trunks and no knee pads, I feel awkward looking at him.
Almost like he's naked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got to wear knee pads. Austin, if Austin had that knee brace, I was like, yo, something's coming out with his junk. Like, but but it's like, it's something about like a certain accessory.
It's a very sensual area, the kneecap.
Yeah.
When it's like too flashy, Austin had like straight black though. So like you can like pull off.
Only Austin and a few select people.
When it's
people.
Too flashy, it's still uncomfortable. Yeah. Like, I feel bad watching, like, an Adrian Neville match. Like, I don't want to see his entrance.
Shawn Michaels is the greatest professional wrestler of all time, and he essentially used a male stripper gimmick.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I would have found that out. It, like, rocked my world, but more so the fact that I've been watching him 10 years and never put it together.
Yo, and I knew that whole routine.
Yeah, that's a nice ego check.
Yo, I could walk from my kitchen, when I was, like, 12, walk from my kitchen to the living room, do that whole routine.
Hey, Shawn Michaels, Ravishing Rick Rude.
Oh, man.
I wanted a pair of Ashley's chaps back in the day before I even knew what they were.
Oh, my goodness.
Just to do the pause.
just do the show.
I saw that Kendrick Lamar guy.
Yeah. Okay.
Yo, listen.
Woo. Okay, I think we got to move on.
Shawn Michaels is dope.
We're wading into awkward territory.
Yes. Segue.
MMA, man. MMA.
All right, here we go. Are you ready? Perfect beer for whatever happens. Ronda wants to make it happen quickly.
Yeah, she gave
There's
her
the arm. She gave it her. Is she all takes... over. Oh just like that.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Yeah, we gotta talk. Well, I just started. I had a working relationship with Yahoo because they're a partner at MMA Weekly, so my stuff had been on there for a few years. But now that I'm writing for Yahoo, one thing I learned very quickly is that people love Ronda Rousey, and I am writing about Ronda Rousey a lot. Men want to fight her. Women want to fight her. NFL people want to fight her. Celebrities want to fight her. Everyone wants to fight Ronda Rousey. But the comments sections go into the 3,000s. Mm-hmm. When we were talking about her being the biggest star, I thought a lot of the time it was hyperbole because it was coming from Dana White. But all signs are pointing to...
Numbers don't lie.
Yeah, Ronda. And if this pay-per-view did do what people were projecting somewhere around the 500,000, that's big. We are talking about women, man.
For money.
This isn't live on NBC, Billie Jean King. This is give me $60 that you worked out of your $500 paycheck for the week, or you know, probably less for a lot of people. And please give it to us to watch women fight. That is just an insane proposition for me, even being a progressive kind of dude.
Yo, I was there. It was packed.
Yeah.
All day it was packed.
Celebs were there.
Everyone came out. Like, it was just. Vin Diesel, yo, that celebration he did when she won was just next level.
Well, we are in a progressive society, right? And things are changing. Kind of, yes. It's sometimes two steps forward, four steps back in some cases. But in a lot of the ways the country is changing, and And one of the things I see with this, and I was a detractor of female MMA. I wasn't against it necessarily, but for me, for the first few years, I had a really hard time watching women get beat the fuck up. There's no other way to really
be our problem.
Right.
Yeah.
Not even, I can't be articulate about it. I can't be anything. With men, I didn't equate it to anything other than Mike Tyson badassery. And with women, I equated it with bruised, battered women's shelters. Now, obviously, over years, that has changed. I always held true to the tenets of hard work, determination, focus, sacrifice. Those are great things that build champions, and that was universal. So I always held to that. I was never a bigot or anything, but what I'm seeing now, and it's a beautiful thing, is that people are paying and viewing this for the first time ever in sport is equal. There's the ladies' tee in golf. Billie Jean King and Arthur Ashe had a match. It's always been a sideshow. These are men and women sharing a pay-per-view card, and in these cases, the women are headlining. The money is distributed evenly, the fans are buying evenly, the merchandise is even, and no one is even talking about it really being men and women outside of the novelty of them fighting each other in regards to Rousey. This is a level playing field for the first time in human history, at least in sport. It's a beautiful thing.
And she did it almost single-handedly.
Yeah, and I think that's where you get a little bit of that crossover is the fact that she's finishing everyone so quick that universal kind of feeling of badassery, as I used before, it shines through. Meaning, you got a bunch of 30 and 40 and 20-year-olds in their living room going, man, I could not kick Ronda Rousey's ass. I'd like to say that I could, so I don't look like a chump, but it's like commonplace. And all your friends. Take everyone else in that living room, and you can have a good old Jackie Chan rumble in the Bronx. You're still getting your ass kicked.
Yo, squash smashes are what make you a star.
Yep.
Like when Hulk Hogan was running things and wrestling.
Are these squash matches? She's making them look like.
Right. But the appeal to Mike Tyson wasn't the opponent. It was the fact of how quickly he was going to get him out of there. If eventually it goes in the reverse and people go, I am not going to pay to watch that. UFC does a good job stacking their cards, though. So you just don't have one headline. But what Ronda's doing right now is just fascinating. You could put her last two fights on Instagram. Right?
Yeah. Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Under 30 combined. 30 seconds.
And there's no... The trouble is we're trying... Who's she going to fight? Who do you care to see her fight at this point?
Well, the answer's there. It just has to happen. And that's
Cyborg. Well, we know it's Cyborg. Yeah. And we know...
Justina.
Yeah.
And she's crushing her, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, most likely.
But the build-up is great.
The build-up's great. And they're doing a great job of co-promoting Invicta on the site of the fight week. They're doing, Invicta fights with Cyborg headlining, which is exactly what they have to do. Because they can't risk bringing Cyborg in and fighting one of these top five bantamweights that they have on their roster, a Sarah McMahon or whatever. You know, if Sarah McMahon goes in there and grapple screws her for three rounds and you take the money away that is definitely there in a side...
So they've got to feed
her some Invicta guys that they're pretty sure she can beat until we can get Rousey at the New Year's card. This is all set up for the New Year's card. It's been set up since last New Year's. That's why Cyborg got a nice $90,000 paycheck from Invicta last time she fought. So it's going to happen. Ronda won't fight again until it happens.
Well, we'll see if it hits 135. If she hits 135,
right?
Because it's going to be rough, and they're aiming for that July card, and her fighting at 135, and we'll see if she can do it. I mean, I don't think Dana's holding to that, two, three fights, 135. No. I think that's gone out the window.
Yeah. One fight,
one. Yeah. Just do it once.
Listen, everyone likes millions of dollars, Dana included. Even more so, Cyborg, who will never make $1 million fighting ever again. If she wins, she will. I'm not saying, but I'm saying right now, the best chance at her in a future and a house and not needing Tito Ortiz to pay her bills is fighting Ronda Rousey immediately will be a million-dollar payday.
Do you think she can actually win? We just saw two huge upsets last week that blew people's minds. Do you think Ronda...
Two huge upsets?
Yeah, two, right?
I mean...
What was the second one?
Joanna is what you would call Joanna an upset, over but it wasn't close.
Carla?
It was. She was plus 120, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean...
Yeah. No, okay. Can it
People
happen? Yeah,
said Carla was.
Yeah,
we'll talk about 185 in a second. But with Ronda and at 135, I don't think Cyborg can beat it.
No, that power is just not the same.
And then you say, can she? Well, of course she can.
Yeah.
There's always a chance. I think if you like betting on Ronda Rousey, now is the time to bet on her because it'll be the closest, like kind of Floyd with Manny or Floyd with Canelo. You're going to get a decent line. I'm going to expect Cyborg is sitting at plus 350 around the time the fight rolls in because of all the money that's going to come in, but
that's not bad.
No, it's about what I think. I mean, when you're looking at the other people sitting at plus 9 and plus 10, you got to look at the most dangerous opponent. Legitimately, no disrespect to Kat or Sarah, who have been billed as the most dangerous. No, I mean Cyborg is undefeated and over however long, and she
stops people.
She stops people exactly, and Not that Ronda doesn't, because she does. She just does it in a different way. Right. Both equally as violent, but Cyborg's
raw
striking.
Power.
Right,
yeah,
raw power.
It's just, the UFC will make a crazy highlight out of that and sell it to the fans.
Yeah.
Like,
the build will be ridiculous.
And it looks like Cyborg's got the promotional stuff down. She just called Ronda a pussy for letting her mom talk.
Talk.
Yeah, and I mean, hey, if you're going to attack someone, attack their family, especially when Dr. Anne seems to have no problem putting herself out there.
Yeah.
She likes kind of, or I don't want to say likes, she seems to have no problem being interviewed, talking, being on social media, having opinions about her daughter's fight career. So if you're a Cyborg, yeah, well, lady,
yep.
I got something for you too, and your daughter. It's smart. So yeah, the build should be quite nice.
Cyborg has to make it happen. It's 10 pounds. 10 pounds for $1 million. That's what it comes down to.
Yep.
She's going to have to lose muscle.
Yeah.
Which she doesn't want to do, which
exactly.
I get.
Every time I've seen her in person, she's just, like, I've seen her at 3 weigh-ins. There's not an inch of fat on her.
Nope.
At that point.
She looks like a dude from every angle.
Yep.
Huge. Standing next to Tito, she didn't look out of place.
Nah.
At all. And then the next day is coming in at, like, what, 170, 175?
I don't even like visualizing Cyborg. Like, me thinking about her right now is upsetting me. Because she's like a brute. She's
imagine
like.
Imagine how the women feel.
Yo, when she beat up Gina Carano,
yeah.
Like, yo, I'm sorry.
She was a lot bigger than Gina in that
she
fight.
She made Gina look horrible.
And Gina's a big girl.
Yeah. And she got dragged.
Yep.
And
retired
my wife
her.
Watched that and was like, turn it off. It's like a scary movie because she was just getting destroyed in there.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah. But no, I think going back to does she have a chance? No. I think Rousey's the most dominant person in sports. You can't really deny it because we're talking about seconds. It's like you said, you can put her fights on Instagram. These are fist fights, man. I'm like 77 and 35 in NHL 15. I'm like a 52 ranking. Like, I'm really good. Like, I beat like top 250 guys all the time. Even like best games, thinking back like years past, Tony Hawk Pro Skater, like I was a hell of a horse player. I'm pretty good at billiards. Listen, I'm not undefeated at anything. I don't win anything in seconds. So when you're talking about people like Ronda Rousey, and I should mention Floyd because, I mean, at 47-0, he's probably the most dominant athlete, but he doesn't win in seconds, and it's not the all-encompassing game of MMA. It's a nice discussion. They're both really dominant, but Ronda in MMA, you just cannot touch that young lady at all.
Nope.
At all.
No, and she's really – she can go until she wants to walk away.
Yeah, I mean, we're not easily impressed, okay? We're not fan – we go to all these fights. We've been covering 8 years. I mean, this isn't – We're not just jumping on the hyperbole wagon to just sound like psychopaths. I mean, I held off for as long as I possibly could, but
I can't even tweet at events when she's fighting now.
Yeah.
No,
like, I'm scared to look down at my laptop.
Yep.
Because I might miss the whole fight.
Yeah, the computer just, oh, it's over, and people are like, it started? Like, yo, son, what happened?
All right, quick.
Let's move on to what just happened this past week. 185. And Pettis on the Wheaties box goes
in and gets dragged.
By Dos Anjos. I mean, dominate. Did you see it coming, Ryan?
Did I see it coming? Well, I got to approach this from a couple different ways. One, I did the cover on USC Magazine for Pettis, and I got to spend a good amount of time with him. And one of the things we talked about was the Guida loss. And he talked about how he was high on himself and how he was really cocky coming into the UFC after the Showtime kick, and he overlooked Guida, and he just didn't take him seriously, and that's why that was the consequence of him getting grappled for 3 rounds. Now, I'm not going to say this happened in this particular fight, but he looked nervous on the way to the cage. He looked shot hesitant when he was out there. He didn't look like himself. He tried to fight back, to all credit, to Pettis in his corner. But here's the thing with him is he doesn't have power. So when people come in and they control him like that and they make it a rough fight, I'm not saying it's the blueprint, but it's what we saw on Saturday night. I was surprised, yes. Did I see it coming? Probably not, because I think myself, along with a lot of other people, truly believe Anthony Pettis is the future of the lighter weights because of, I mean, let's keep in mind, this kid's only 26 or whatever. I mean, he lost on Saturday night, but...
people lose.
People lose, exactly. But he is really... Right, exactly. He's really going to need to take that Ben Askren, training program that he's got at his disposal up there at Duke Rufus. And he's really going to have to make sure he doesn't get up on his back, because when he does, he's just putting himself in far, far too much trouble in regards to control, because he doesn't deal with getting bullied well.
So here's the fascinating thing about that fight. I didn't think Pettis was going to lose, right? But I knew what the blueprint was, because even though he didn't want to admit it against Clay Guida, Pettis needs space to operate.
Yep.
That's how he moves.
Yeah.
He has to operate, and he has to move forward. He's not good fighting moving backward, right? Melendez made a lot of mistakes in their fight. But what he did was he put a lot of pressure on him. As soon as Dos Anjos landed that what was it, the left hook? Or the right hook?
The right hook. Put him open?
Yeah. I said, fight's over. Yep. As soon as that happened, I was like, Pettis don't know what to do.
And as opposed to the Melendez pace, that was more frenetic.
Right. Dos Anjos, this was measured.
Exactly. He measured and calculated. Exactly.
Mixed it up. He gave him fits. As soon as I saw him get hit, I was like, oh, the fight's over. Because you see Pettis blinking, and you can see the spirit leave his body. I got clipped. I'm hurt. And I don't know what to do.
Yo, blood's a whole different beast. Like, when you get hit and you get, like, a legit cut and you can't see, like, as soon as he was like, oh, I can't see, and he was done. He was so focused on that he lost all form of a game plan and everything.
If he was like, oh, I can't see. If he was done, he would have got put in the way by a guy like RDA. I think he did try to fight back. He doesn't have raw power.
But he's fighting back. That's the problem. He was fighting. He was on his back. He was on the entire damn fight.
Right.
And Dos Anjos, he put together the perfect game plan.
What about the Dos Anjos speculation about his physique and his body? You guys have any opinion on that? Because I don't want to cast an ill light on the championship run. But if you compare pictures from him 4 years ago to pictures the way he was on fight night, and it's my understanding, I don't know what the Texas Commission is, but. I don't want to talk too much on that, but did you see the side-by-side comparison?
I saw when people were posting it and talking about it.
I mean, it's almost at this point we can't avoid it, right?
No, you can't.
I don't want to speculate, but it's just unfortunate.
You don't want to accuse.
Right.
It's fair to speculate.
Right.
Because at this point, we've seen shocking test results enough to speculate.
And this is one of those ones where it wouldn't be shocking because of the body thing. You know, we had Josh Saman. You know, most people know Josh. He had the great knockout of Eddie Gordon. At the end of the year, knockout of the year candidate. He's a guy that has long been considered a poster boy for steroid use. You look at him, he has the acne on his back. He's just a bulging human being. He's like, listen, I had a growth spurt in high school, and I packed on muscle, and I've been that way ever since. And he lobbied for lifetime bans for steroid abuse. I mean, I don't want to throw these guys just because of their physique,
yeah.
But I think it's just more a testament to the unfortunate times we're living in that it's like one of the immediate things we go to when someone gets physically dominated in their body, the challenger
when
or whatever.
When it clearly changes in a 4-year period, 3-year period, you usually don't do that while getting older.
Right.
No, you got to ask questions, man.
Yeah, like you don't get older and your physique leans out and you go through puberty at 30-something. Like it just doesn't happen. So you have to look at that. But once again, if he's not failing the test, I mean – You give them the credit.
Well, and that's the good news. It seems like the UFC is trying to clean it up.
Yeah,
it seems they're trying to.
They're going for it.
We'll see how far it goes.
Yes, exactly.
The fight wasn't in Brazil.
Right.
You know, it was stateside. There was some testing. It's a little harder to hide it. He had to get credit. And does it make him a better fighter? Sure, but I think game plan was there regardless.
Right. What they have to do in regards to the steroid issue, I think, is not sending double messages. You can't have Vitor Belfort getting a title shot coming off a positive test. You can't be rewarded for it. There has to be, and that's, I think, the thing where they were losing ground is the double standard of it all. And, and people were kind of like, wait, this doesn't make sense. It's not adding up.
Drug testing in general.
Yeah.
Like, whether it's PEDs or, coke or weed or whatever.
Right.
Like, you got to be somewhat consistent.
Well, no, you can do coke. Coke's okay.
Wait, that's perfectly fine.
Coke's
okay. Ooh, John Bones Jones.
Yes, you can do it. Coke is totally okay. No, and you were kind of talking about upsets headed into Saturday, and Kel, you talked. You said the big one was. You called it a big upset, and that was Joanna Jacek. I got it.
I'm not trying.
Yeah,
Jacek. She said it. We met with her a couple weeks ago for a story. And she pronounced it, had her pronounce it again, still didn't get it. But I got a video of it, and I'm good with it. But no, she went in there as a plus 120 dog, and she put a stamp on it. She looks like she's the future of the division.
Yeah. I mean, what she did was – I mean, when you're a wrestler and you're just a wrestler
– and Esparza's the best wrestler.
Yeah, you're a great wrestler, but she just couldn't get past that jab. Like, she was eating that thing like lunch. Knuckle sandwiches all day.
And to be fair, Carla probably was the second best in that weight class in the world. So, I mean, it's hard to deem her the best in the world just because he has the UFC title.
No, best wrestler.
She
seemed to have the best wrestling credentials. So when I look at that, it's like, okay, if Joanna seemingly is one of the better strikers, Robert Drysdale said she has the fastest hands in MMA. You should have seen my reaction when he told me that. So she got the fastest hands in MMA. I dropped. I go, what? I just, what? And he's like, Vitor Belfort, man. And he started, because he trained Vitor, and he started talking about Vitor. I thought he was out of his mind. Now, the performance on Saturday, Joanna goes out there and does what she does. So if she can handle the most dominant wrestler like that, what is a striker going to offer?
Nothing.
At that weight, I mean, who has clear knockout power? That's right. Going to clip her. No right. one.
I mean,
so,
Rose is great striking, but
she doesn't have that.
Not violent like that.
Yeah, that girl is, a wrecking ball.
I heard in the gym they were saying maybe she was overtrained. That she just puts her head down. Yes, no problem. I do. Yeah, that's all she says. Yes, no problem. It's no problem. It's no problem. That's all she says. When she did her open workout, she worked out for an hour and a half. She was dripping sweat all over the mat. And that was just her all day. There was no cool down period. This was 6 days before the fight. You know, so from what I saw in the cage, and this is such a, I never see this. This is exactly what I saw in the training room. You can watch Misha Tate. You can even watch Ronda Rousey. Watch her training videos.
Not the same.
Not even the same. Close.
Yeah.
But Joanna, the same and maybe even better. And that, boy, oh boy, that's going to be fun. It's a division I can't say I necessarily cared about when it came on. I mean, from a professional standpoint, of course we care. We follow it.
Yeah, definitely.
But excitement, I was like, okay, we'll see. But now, and I think a lot of people like that. People love those mystical Euro strikers, right? Igor Volchanskin, Fedor Emelianenko. I mean, it just...
When you can't pronounce the name correctly for like 6 months, you love it.
Yeah. All right, so we got to wrap this up. Right. And we're going to wrap this up with pound for pound. I want to ask you, Big Mac, where does Pettis fall now that he's lost? And where does Dos Anjos, does he fall into, does he go into the top 10 pound for pound or 15 pound for pound fighters?
Well, first of all, I don't mean to hijack your question. The top of the pound for pound list is John Bones Jones. He's also the greatest fighter to ever live. If you want to try to debate that, by all means, hit me up on Twitter at Ryan McKinnell. We can have this debate. I cannot believe people are still having this debate after what John's done. Anyway, Pettis has taken a huge hit. He looked terrible on Saturday night. It wasn't that he just lost. He got dominated.
Yep.
And he got dominated the way he got dominated prior. So if we're talking about a lineage, if we're talking about history repeating itself, it's hard to make any argument for Anthony in the top 10 or 15.
Okay.
Because he got dominated 5 years apart, 4 years apart, in the same exact style, in the same exact way. Essentially saying, if you do not feed him the Donald Cerrone's, you know, of the world or whoever. I mean, he beat a lot of good people. I don't want to say he, you know, Gilbert was a wrestler and he beat him. But by and large, if you're not giving him compelling matchups, there's a chance he could take an L. And you can't really have that in the pound for pound discussion. You need the Jose Aldos. You need the John Joneses. You need the Chris Weidmans. That when you discuss the possibility of losing the Cain Velasquezes, it is not laughable, but it's, you know, they're always going to be the favorites. And I can't say Anthony Pettis is always going to be the favorite. And in regards to RDA, the dude had a streak in his career where he lost like three in a row or whatever. So, no. Neither one of them really bust into anywhere in the top five. RDA might bust in the top 10. Pettis should be off the list. Now, I don't do the UFC rankings. So, I don't know how that all works out, mainly because I'm not going every week and adjusting my rankings and having fans come to me, why'd you do this, man? Listen, I got a job and a life. If you're expecting me to, I can't have that type of responsibility. So, applaud you, Andreas.
With that being said, is it almost a foregone conclusion that RDA will lose a title in the next year?
If he fights Khabib Nurmagomedov, absolutely.
There we go. That's the name
I thought so too. Yeah, like.
Yeah, if he fights Khabib, I think he's in deep doo-doo. You know, that really comes down to the Cerrone fight. If Cerrone ends up somehow beating Khabib, then he's going to fight RDA. And I have a real tough time imagining Cerrone dealing with RDA in the way he's going to need to. Because you have really got to... I don't know how to beat RDA right now. He's on a really weird run where he looks like one of the most dominant fighters in the sport. But everything I know about the hot flavor of the moment is telling me to calm down.
He's on that Matt Brown. He's on that Matt Brown right now.
That is exactly, very good.
We saw Robbie have the same run to his title, like where you're just like, yo, this guy has never been like this.
Yeah.
And then you just wake up and the guy's dominant.
And
I mean, Rumble's on that right now. You know, Rumble somehow knocks off John Jones. It's the same path. Mm-hmm. It's one of those just, yo, this guy, it just turned on for him and it clicked.
That's the beauty about MMA, though, is it can constantly keep putting you in your place. Josh Berkman, I legitimately thought, was like laying floor somewhere. before World Series of Fighting. Before World Series of Fighting. Sorry, before World Series of Fighting, and he beat John Fitch. He was fighting in Utah, and so I didn't even know he was still a fighter. And he somehow worked himself back to the UFC, and he was making a paycheck again. Now, that's a smaller scale. Anthony Johnson is a much better example. Anthony was 300 pounds, I swear to God, fighting down south in regional promotions. I'd see him at events, and I saw him one night, and I didn't know it was him. And I am very good recognizing faces. He was so big and so blown up that I thought he had lost all motivation. I thought he was out of the sport. I thought his promise was done, and here he is fighting the greatest fighter to ever live in what is going to be one hell of a pay-per-view.
It is.
And that sport, this sport, MMA, the surprises truly do keep on coming, and I think that's what keep a lot of us coming back for more, a lot of fans.
So we'll end on that. Big Mac, great to have you.
Man.
Great to have you.
Yes, stuff. Thanks for joining us. You got to come back, got to talk more.
I was going to say, I'm sure it won't be the last
time. Of course not.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
So, everyone, thanks for listening. Make sure you check out the podcast every week. It's downloadable on Thursdays on iTunes. Sooner or later, we're going to put our videos up on Fridays on YouTube. Thanks for supporting us. Make sure you check the Twitter and all social media. Until next time, we're out.
Peace.
I wish I could keep this feeling. I wish I could keep this feeling.